Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2018 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
So, my name is Allison Redford, and I wanted to kind of start, I guess I could tell about myself first. So I grew up in Arizona. My husband and I have 6 children. We have been kind of on and off homeschoolers, actually, sadly, for the last like 8 years. I was homeschooled for a few years when I was a child. I told my kids that I was teaching this class, and my 16-year-old scrunched his nose and said, "Classical education, like old music?" I said, nope, not old music. But I don't know. So we'll talk about, my kids and my family as we go. But I wanted to know a little bit about you guys. Do any of you actually, do you use classical education? Kind of. Okay. So are you willing to tell me, like, why are you here? What are the things that you're kind of hoping to get out of this?
I kind of closet love the ideas of classical education.
Uh-huh.
I don't know very many people that just do one thing and only do that one thing. But I think you usually grab things that you like from different ways of thinking or different theories, and you try to put them into practice in the ways that work for you. So I don't know as much about it as I would like to know about it. Last year or 2 years ago, Jennifer, somebody did a class on classical education and explained like trivium and like why they study Latin, and just it was very interesting to me, but that's all I really knew about it. So I just kind of wanted to learn more about it and how you can use it in a practical way, maybe, or what it looks
like. That's pretty much all I'm going to talk about, is the practical ways that we have used it in the different times. So okay, we'll talk about that. Anybody else want to say exactly why?
I'm very new to all of it, so
okay, it'll be new and different. Well, probably not really, but.
I know I'm assigned to this class, but I requested your class.
Really?
So, yes, because I'm in the same boat. I read like well-trained mind.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds wonderful and inspiring. Uh-huh. And then actual implementation, I'm like, someday, maybe we'll do that.
In your own way.
Uh-huh. Kind of a mix of all of that.
Yeah.
So I'm not actually a homeschooler, mm-hmm. except one time with one child.
What brings you here?
Because I have a child now, my last one, who needs something.
So you're trying to figure out what that something is.
And I'm kind of an organic person. I remember when I read John Adams' biography, I was really impressed with the way he educated himself,
mm-hmm.
which was basically through the classics, mm-hmm. and through reading, old literature and whatever. And I was really impressed by that. And I'm kind of a homeschooler at heart in a way. Just the idea of that, home is where you learn. And so, anyway, but this just, it interests me. So
okay.
I just wanted to find out more about it, because I need to find something to do with this.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you how I got here. Like I said, I was homeschooled a little bit when I was a kid, so I wasn't necessarily afraid of it when we were looking for options. And I am kind of drawn to it because I do love the classics, and I do love that idea that there were all of these men who were somewhat uneducated, and they sat around and they read classic works and they thought about it and they started countries and changed war outcomes and did all, they did all of these amazing things with a few classics in their pocket and just a brain to think about it. And so I am really drawn to that. Sometimes I look at my kids and I think, I don't know if I'm getting anywhere, but my homeschooling thing was, I was not a horrible student, but I wasn't really a good one. I just remember that I struggled in math forever. When I grew up in Payson, Arizona, which still to this day has a large homeschooling community, but even 30 years ago when my mom started homeschooling, there was a lot of homeschoolers, so it wasn't really weird, and a lot of them were my friends. So finally somebody talked my mom into trying it, and she started homeschooling when I was in sixth grade and I was the oldest. And for me, it was just a wonderful, magical time because my mom handed me a math book. She handed me a Saxon math book. And she said, when you are done with this, you can be done with math for the year. And I'm the kid who was always totally behind. I didn't feel like I knew math. I would copy the questions off the board and hide the paper in my bag and turn in a blank paper so that I could do them at home and hand it in the next day. And I don't know if the teacher told my mother behind my back and they just never said anything, or if the teacher just realized that was what I did every day. I don't know, but I did that. Like, I did that. So, and it was simply because there was no way I could complete it during school, and the teacher never said anything, so I just kept doing it. But she handed me this math book, and I was super motivated by no more math. So I sat down and I busted my buns. I finished by Christmas, and every day my goal was to do the math as fast as I can. And that might not be a great learning tool, but I did it. I would get through math really fast every day, and as long as I was not missing a lot, my mom was like, okay, you're good. And by Christmas I was done, and I did no more math until the next year. And she did that. The 2 years I was homeschooled, my mom did that. When I went back, welcome, when I went back to public school, I was actually ahead of most of the kids I had been behind. Now granted, I rapidly, within about a year, was way back behind them again. But my mother also handed me and again, this is kind of age, you know, you can't do this for everybody. She handed me a science workbook. And I just went outside. And I spent all my time outside. I got to listen to the birds and ID the birds. I got to look at all the flowers, ID the flowers. I discovered bugs. My dream in this lifetime is to become an entomologist. My husband will tell you that that is true. I just love bugs. They are so, and technically there are bugs, like they're part of the insect. Anyway, I just love it, okay? I love it enough that one of my brothers-in-law married my sister, made fun of me all of the time, and he just got my dream job as an entomologist working for the Audubon Society, and this is all because of me, because he never would have thought about it without me. But this is because of my 2 years in homeschool when my mom just handed me this book and let me discover the world. And that's not really how I think about classical education when I read The Well-Trained Mind, the book of, like, it has to be really structured. But we did structured spelling. I was a horrible speller and went to homeschool. My mom just sat me down a few minutes every day. She showed me that there were rules. And if I knew what the rules were, spelling was actually easy. And I'm a pretty darn good speller now. Like, I have confidence in my spelling only because I know that there's a rule for everything. I went with one of my younger children to their public school thing, and they were like, oh, well, you know, handed me a list of all of the techniques I was supposed to use with my kids so that they would read, you know, and they were like, basically skip the word and guess the word and, you know, whatever, look at the picture. And I was like, why don't you just teach them how to read the word? And she said, because there's nothing for that word. And I said, oh, yes. And I just pointed out rules. And she's the reading specialist. But she didn't know any of the rules as to why the word. You just teach the kids this is a French word. And those letters at the end of in French, that's how they do it. Like, there are rules. And when we know what the rules are, then we can be successful. And I just always felt like I was a horrible speller because I couldn't do it. And it was just because I didn't know what the rules were. I had not learned the rules. And so that those few years, I mean, they were freeing in all kinds of ways. We talked social aspects, like I'm the oldest of eight kids. At that time, my mom probably only had six or seven, but I'll tell you, if we were done by noon, my mom was like, see ya, right? So if we were done by noon, we played with our homeschool friends, because again, I grew up where there were a lot of them. And then 3 o'clock, public school let out, and so there's a whole new group of friends to play with at three. So for me, those years just felt like total freedom, but they were years in which I learned so much. This is my family. When my mother was, this is about the time my mom stopped homeschooling, but that's my mom and all of us. So we all know that life turns out exactly like we think it will, right? Like, this is, we plan just so Heavenly Father will laugh at us. My plans were, like, have a gazillion babies, probably in rapid succession, as many as I possibly could into my 40s. This was my actual plan, right? I have never been pregnant. I did not get married young. When my husband and I got married, we ended up doing foster care. So by our 6th anniversary, this was like right about at our 6th anniversary, we had all of these kids that we had adopted from foster care of obviously varying ages. So we had kids coming from an incredibly diverse educational background as well as everything else. And one of the things that really made me want to homeschool was the last group that we got are the two older girls. And Lainey was 8 and she could not read. She did not know the whole alphabet. It was just really difficult. And you know, the school offered to give her half an hour remediation every week in second grade in order to help her read. And in second grade, half an hour when you cannot read is not, that's, and I just finally said that's unrealistic for either of us parties to think that this child is going to succeed. So I had, the way it works out is these two are 2 days apart and this one is 8 months younger. So I thought, what the heck, I can do one grade, right? One grade with 3 kids, we can do this. And, you know, bumps and bruises along the way, whatever, we did it. And she is back at grade level now. She is back in public school now, but she is a sophomore in high school. She just finished her sophomore year. Sophomore, right? She finished her sophomore year. And she did really well. She got A's and B's all year. And it's a very good source of pride for her. So bumps and bruises along the way. It might not all work out, but some of the things will be okay. When I decided I was going to start the homeschooling, like I'm thinking about this, my mom handed me Well-Trained Mind. And though I will say, when you look at classical education, for me, it feels like bringing public school home a little bit. Like you're in a very structured environment, you're doing all of the core things. And that was kind of comforting because we were starting out and you're really afraid whether or not you can do this. Your husband is an engineer and he says, what's this going to look like? Your in-laws are like, homeschool kids are not educated or socially adept, right? And I say, well, my siblings were educated at home, and they say, what? You know, so what I liked about it was the structure. I really liked, if any of you have not seen, okay, if you are familiar with this book at all, raise your hand. Okay, this is kind of like the Bible of classical education. It's a book that has like all of the answers in it. And I liked it because I was super overwhelmed talking to people who did homeschool, and there are 650,000 curriculums and ideas that you can choose from, and it's like deer in the headlights. I liked it because it tells you that you can do it. You are the parent of this kid, you know the child the best, you know what their needs are, you know what their strengths are, and you can meet them. So that helps me take a deep breath. And then it talks about the idea behind classical education is not that, the trivium. Okay, so you say to yourself, trivium, something to do with three, that is correct. There are 3 stages that they use for education, and they base it on the development of the child's brain, how the brain can function at a different age. So the first one is called the grammar stage. I did put a typo on there and it says kindergarten, but they're not really huge into kindergarten, just so you know. First through fourth grade, they call it the grammar stage or the parrot stage. This is when children memorize really easily, and I'll tell you, I did not buy into that idea. I'll just show you some of the things that I use that are in this, but you don't have to use that. I used first language lessons was what I chose. I, in the beginning, chose a lot of things that were scripted for me because it was less prep time for me with all my kids, and it was less, am I going to be able to do this right? So this is a scripted thing, and it helps you teach your kids. But like almost every week, they have a poem to memorize, and they are not short. And I looked at that and I said to myself, there is no way that my little children are going to be memorizing that in this short amount of time. But they did. And the funny thing is, like, they still remember them. Like, just last year, my sophomore daughter I was talking about went into a new class halfway through, and they were supposed to memorize something over Christmas for a grade. And the teacher said, I'm not going to make you do it because you weren't here. And she said, if I just come up with something off of the top of my head, can I have extra credit? And so she used one of hers that she had done when she was 8 years old.
Awesome.
busted it out for the teacher, and the teacher gave her extra credit. So it just, so I'll tell you, like, when I looked at the things that they said kids could do in 1 through 4, I was like, yeah, I don't know. But this one is all about building the foundation. This is the foundational stage. So what they want is you really do memorize a ton of stuff. You memorize lists of things. You memorize spelling rules. You memorize grammar rules. You memorize all kinds of things. I was talking to one of my kids, and I was amazed that he had a really great definition for an adverb. I said, how did you know that? Like, and he said, you taught me that? Like, I said it 1,000 times. I was like, oh. I did not remember that I taught you that, but apparently it stuck. So, and again, he was my other sophomore in high school. I was like, oh, well, okay, apparently it did actually stick more than mine stuck when I was in school. But anyway, so it's just like all you need to know about that one as you're just starting out and gaining information is that is just when a kid learns. And it's fun for them to memorize, which surprised me. You can play all kinds of memory games or whatever. I wasn't fun. I forgot my book that we have, but I literally have like little picture albums for them that I stuck things that, like I stuck the poems that we were using from that. I stuck their articles of faith in there. I stuck the multiplication table, not that my kids mastered that as well as I wanted them to. The grammar rules. I just stuck things that I wanted them to memorize in there. And then every day I would say, pull out your memory book. And we pull out the memory book and we would just go through it. So it is a time of a lot of repetition. But I found, you know, fun poems in addition to the other ones. The next one is the logic stage. Basically 5th grade through 8th grade. This is where you start talking about the why, and they're starting to learn how to like just put stuff together. In the first time when you talked about World War I in the early grades, it's a lot of facts, it's a lot of people, it's a lot of like events. And in the 5th through 8th, you start talking about why. Why did people fight the war? Why did people feel that way about the war? What caused people to do this? Just really, you just start looking a little bit deeper, and you have the underlying facts to build on, and you have the underlying facts to help you to make those connections. So it's just kind of, first you learn information, and then you start to learn what to do with information. It's basically like you start with memorization, and then you go to logical organization, and then the next thing that you're going to go to is your clear expression. So the high school years are supposed to be there for you to be able to take all of that information, take all of the logical things that you've learned, and then apply them to things that you know in a clear way so that you are, this is where, you know, you're writing your research paper, so you come up with a topic. You know, you develop your own theory, and then you put together all this information that you know and that you can find on your own into this clearly expressed paper that is written correctly because you've learned the rules of grammar, you've learned about paragraphs, you've learned about the clear writing process, etc. And so this is where you are just learning how to clearly express your own ideas that are built on logical things. Let's see. Okay, so basically there are two kind of things you're looking at. You're looking at mastery of skills, which is just it's kind of your rote memorization. It's the spelling rules, the grammar rules, the paragraph rules, your math, your science, your factual things that are skills. And then the second one is the discovery and exploration. And that is all of your like your content things, your literature, your exploring and discovering things in literature, music, writing, thinking, art, history. This is the exploration. So it's kind of the two things. It's you're learning all of that foundational things that you need to be successful, and you are just exploring all of the things around you to gain that information and to know what to do with the factual stuff you have. So they do history in kind of a 4-year rotation. So in 1st grade, you start with ancients through 400 AD. And 2nd grade, you do medieval through early Renaissance. And then 3rd grade and 4th grade. And then you start over. So this one is just nice because they get each of the time periods in each of the developmental stages. And so it's basically each time they go, they get more. So we start with a little bit of fact. We go into fact and why, and then we go into fact and why and my expressions about that. And then they do that with the science, which is interesting for me. Like, they actually study, they encourage you, but you do not have to. That's what I love about this. You don't have to do anything they say. The science kind of goes along with that. You start when you're learning about the ancients and early civilizations, you're studying biology and classification and human body. And then when you get into the medieval and early Renaissance, you're doing earth science and astronomy. And then when you get into early modern stuff, you're doing chemistry. And when you get into the more modern things, you're doing the very modern things like physics and computer sciences. And so they've even basically found a way to incorporate science into the historical period. So it is all really interrelated.
That's a good question. So I got two questions, actually. One, what if you start your kids after grade one?
That's a good question.
Can you just jump in wherever? And the second is, what if you have kids in different grades? Can you just still do it all together?
Talk about that before. Uh-huh. You just do a rotation. There was a mom a couple years ago that said she just did everything in a rotation. And that way, by the time they were done, they've done it twice.
Right.
You know, if you did a rotation of 8 years or whatever.
So don't worry.
It just wasn't in order. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is not the end of the world. And like, if you're looking in the wherever my book went, they'll even tell you, like, just start wherever. You can choose to just, if it's the first year you're homeschooling, you can start at one and just cycle through. If you want to start in the middle, it is certainly not going to kill your kids to start in the middle and then do the beginning later.
So do you use the books recommended in this book to teach those subjects then? Because I know I have the book.
So I will tell you, okay, well, can we do that a little bit later? Okay, we'll do that. We'll go over a curriculum a little bit too. Hi. Let's see what else. Everything's interrelated. Don't panic. Okay, so we'll talk kind of about schedules. So basically, this is just how my life goes. You try and try again, right? So I have used a lot. They have a few things in the book, like daily schedules, okay? I left this one blank on purpose because you'll all do that different. When I very first started, it looked like this is at 8 o'clock, this is at 9 o'clock, this is 9:30, and I scheduled everything. Like, we'd go to the library, that was on there. We'd go to visit great-grandma and read stories. You know, we would, but this was part of school and it was really structured. And that is good, like it worked. Like when we did it, I liked it. Then we moved to South Carolina and we lived on a farm. And the first year we lived there, my sister got married, my husband's brother got married, so we drove back multiple times. And if you're gonna drive all the way from South Carolina, you might as well see everybody while you're there, right? So. Kids got a school bag, backpack, each one had their own, get in the car, we drive 32 hours, and when they're bored, pull out your books. If you finish your math before we get there, then you can be done. And when we got there, several mornings, you know, we were like 3 hours ahead at that point. My kids were up early, grandmas were not. We tried to do some things in the morning. Before grandmas got up, when my kids were up, it kept them quiet, then we were done. And then mostly during that year, we were lists. Like this. Here's your list of what you have to do. I learned pretty quickly that my children will manipulate a situation, so they didn't get to check off their own list. They had to check, like, I checked off their list. But, you know, you can just put on there, I think this is just one of their, I think Mondays from like a first grade recommendation and Tuesdays from like a fourth grade recommendation or something. I just pulled it out of there, but I put other things on mine. I put piano on mine. I put chores on mine. I put brush your teeth and read your scriptures on mine. You put, in my opinion, you put what's important for you. And some of mine had time frames like they recommend. Reading, I wanted them to do reading for, you know, 30 minutes. But if you don't care how long they take on it, then leave off the time. But this was one of my favorite ways to do it because it allowed them to be independent, but they didn't have to be.
Do you ever find that your kids made one problem of math take 30 minutes?
Uh-huh. Right now I'm about,
yeah.
I currently in that situation and I'm punching myself in the face.
Because if I give them a time, it's hard. If I give them a page, somehow if I give them a page, they do it in 5 minutes. And if I give them 30 minutes, it'd be one problem.
Well, in that case, I would just, mine actually said one lesson.
Yeah.
Like mine said one math lesson. So if they were like me and they were like, I am so done with this, and they timed themselves so they could be done in 15, who cares?
Right.
And if it took me longer because I did not get it that day and it took me half an hour, you know.
Like
so.
Reading, you would quantify, you can either do 30 minutes or you can say one chapter.
You can do or.
Yeah.
And same thing, like math, you got time or you start applying it to one lesson or
pages,
even
X,
number.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more so
mm-hmm.
than
so
you
that's where you start tailoring it as you need
quantity,
to. You know? Still have the structure, but it depends on how you might tailor it to your individual needs.
Right.
I just
yes.
wanted to say with in the book when she recommends like how long you should be reading and stuff,
mm-hmm.
kind of realize you have to work up to those
right.
periods. Because my son, if you hand him a book and told him to read for 30 minutes, it would not
right.
But he can read for, you know, 5 minutes here and break it.
Well, and I have one kid where if I say go read and I give him a time limit, the only thing he's doing is staring at the clock.
The
if I say to myself, he's starting to read and this is what time it is, and then when time has passed, I say, I notice you're still reading, but if you want to stop, you can. It works better. So again, it's finding what works for you and finding what works for your kids, because like I said, at different phases in my life, different things have worked and different things have not worked. Let's see. When we were in South Carolina, the list was really great because we lived in the middle of nowhere. And so I tried to put things on the same day because they were so far away. So for instance, Wednesdays, I would leave at 2:30, I think, drive to the next town over. We would go to gymnastics for an hour, and then we would go to music lessons where we would eat dinner in the parking lot, and then we would sit through, I think, two lessons, so probably about another hour, and then we would go to the church building and have evening activities and scouts and all of that stuff, and then we would go home, like, past bedtime. But we use that time because if you can do it in the car, or you're going to be sitting in an office totally bored, like, I just got to the point where I had no problem sitting in a doctor's office, dentist's office, what else do we sit out that I call the boring place? Like, I'll flat out tell my kids, we're going someplace boring, bring your stuff. And we will sit, it's totally true, I do this. And we will sit there in the thing, like in the DMV or wherever. You know you're gonna be there forever. You know it's gonna be horribly boring. I just bring my books. I'll do my oral reading with my kids. I'll have my kids do their oral reading with me. I will sit down and do the math lesson with three kids. I will literally do any of these things in front of whoever is sitting in the waiting room. And it makes use of the time. When we're home, they can enjoy their time. And when we're out, they can get it done. So that was, I don't know, it's different for me applying it because when I think of the bring the school home, which is honestly how I think about classical education in my head, is they're getting what they would get. My kids are not behind. We're doing the things that they need to do. And I like that, but I also like feeling like I can do, I liked discovering that I was not stuck in the 8, 9, 10 o'clock block when that was difficult for us. Okay, so remember when I said, we'll see if this works, remember when I said that I just could not believe that my children could memorize things, so this is just ridiculous, this is me, my kids, but let's see if you can hear it. And you love the fake smile there at the end, right? So, whoops, sorry. So my kids have a lot of grandmas, right? Because they have a lot of birth grandmas, a lot of adoptive grandmas everywhere. And the grandmas share all the kids. So for Mother's Day and Christmas, we send out a box to each of them. And so one year, this is what I did. I said, oh, my kid just memorized all of these poems. So we dressed up in the yard, went out in the yard, and the kids said their little poems. It had, obviously, I had an intention when I had my kids learn that one, right? They all learned all of the poems almost, but they got to do the one that was the most, applicable to them, I guess, like the one that they liked or the one that we chose because of them or the one that they chose. And it was just a really fun thing to do. We did, this is my kid who has a different face in every photo you've ever taken of him. And we found this funny little poem.
I bounce up, I bounce down. was a grin and a frown. Show your tongue, squint your nose, wiggle your ears, and hold that close.
So he's actually here for the first time this year. He came with us. But we just, this is the poem my daughter did when she had to pull one out for her teacher this last year. This is the one that she pulled out.
Oops. The Weatherman on Trial by Helen Louise Miller. On 4th of July, the Wildcat 9 had the biggest game of the year. But just as I came up to bat, the storm clouds did appear. The field became a sea of mud. It surely was a shame. Because of that old weatherman, we lost our biggest game.
So we just had fun. This is our older boy, and he loved to read biographies, and he was so into like individual people. And
Mr. Lincoln was a farmer. He walked behind a plow, and he would plant and harvest if he were living now. Mr. Lincoln was a lawyer. He lived by rule and book, and he would seek for justice or he alive to look. Mr. Lincoln was a president. He ruled by sword and pen, and he would serve his country well were he alive again. Mr. Lincoln was a man of God. He often knelt in prayer, and he would pray for freedom that all the world might share.
But they learned, like, most of these things they learned in 2 weeks or less. Like, they just, they learned them really fast, and that was always still to this day. Uh-huh. It was just repetition. So that's what my kids look like today. But yeah, we just, and it, I say that like it was a ton. It wasn't really a ton. We would usually read it two or three times in the morning, and then sometimes we'd either read it two or three times when we finished that subject or two or three times at the end of the day. Just in a row, either all together or whatever. And then pretty soon they liked it. Like, we learned the Goops. I don't know if any of you know that poem, but it's really funny. I have one of my kids. And they learned Mr. Nobody. I can't remember if that came out of the curriculum or not, but that's the one.
Another method that was used is she'd write it down and then you just start taking words out.
Yeah, we did that too.
Especially with scriptures, we tend to do something like that. But yeah, it just really got to where read through it. After reading through it a couple times, start seeing how they could do it.
In theater, they do a thing where you have a partner, and when you're trying to learn your lines, your partner will say your first line, and you repeat it, and it's super rapid, and then they say the first one and the second one, and then you just repeat it. And you do that until you've gone through like your whole part, and it works with the poetry and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun thing to do, is to pair kids up and, you know,
have them go back and forth,
and before they know it, it's like poof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kids love it. I have little kids, and they memorize a poem a week, and they love it.
Yeah.
But and then they have to tell it to like three. We do the Good and the Beautiful, so they have to tell it to three different people, like a grandparent, a friend, a cousin, or whatever.
One time we went to an old folks' home, and instead of doing music or whatever, my kids stood up front and they told stories, and they all did poems, was good for them, and the little, of course, you know, the older people just thought they were so cute, you know. They don't even have to do it well, and they still do it. But they usually do. So if you're looking in the well-trained mind, we talked a little bit earlier about curriculum. One of the things that I really liked was, you know, I mean, there's four editions now, and I've used more than one, and obviously my mom used a different one than I did, but I like that they go through the curriculum, they've looked through curriculum, and they make recommendations on curriculum based on all kinds of things. They do it based on cost, they do it based on learning style, so for me, looking through it for different kids with different things I could say to my, like, it just made the process faster for me when I could say, okay, which of these do I like and which do I not like, which have worked for me. Like I said in the beginning, I started with a lot of scripted things for most stuff. And there are some that I found that I love that I still use, and some things that I just choose to do on my own. Some things that I found that just absolutely, maybe I shouldn't pull out the ones that absolutely don't work. But there are some that I found that just were not they just did not work with my kids, or they did not work with me. They just. I really love. I'll show you ones that I do love. I did really like this one because it is simple enough for the kids, and yet they do learn a lot. And they did actually. This one is actually written by them. I love so many different histories that it's hard to say this is the only one I love because I use a lot of. This is Story of the World. I like it because you can do all kinds of different ages. They have color pages. They have maps. They have other reading things. They have thought-provoking questions already written out for you that will kind of guide the kid in the right direction, but it makes really good conversation.
I think a thing to add to that, it really tailored well to different ages.
Yeah, we did like that.
Because it gave a good variety of questions that you could assign to different children to go through. And so it took a lot of the prep work out, and yet it was very comprehensive for all your children.
I don't think these are in their book. If they are, I didn't realize that. But I really like A Child's Story of America. It is well written. It's like you could hand it to your kid if you wanted to. It has very big print and pretty good information. I'm sorry, what?
The author.
That's a good question. Christian Liberty Press. I don't know who. I like Our American Heritage. I totally obviously found this at a thrift store for 25 cents. But I really liked that it does have good, colorful pictures. It makes it easy reading for a kid. I don't have to lecture because it's almost like a storybook. The kids can sit down and read it like a book instead of like mom is telling me this. And it puts it in really easy to read format so my younger kids could just read it. It's called Our American Heritage. It's in a Becca book. I don't know. A friend of mine introduced me to this one. It's called Ancient Civilizations in the Bible, so I used it in conjunction with the old one. That's a good idea. Okay.
While you get others.
That one, I just liked that it tied everything into scriptures, and that's kind of, when I started homeschooling, one of my kids was mad that his history and his religion were intertwined. He was like, I'm sorry, why are there scriptures with this? And it actually kind of upset him. He was like, it's not supposed to be together and I don't like it. And I said, but you can't. So it was a time for me to teach where like, you cannot even really have history without religion. It's the reason half of the wars were fought. It's
right.
Tied to the reason people moved around the world. It was just amazing for me to see that in his brain, they really were totally separate. And for me, that was just unfathomable. I know, right? Like my kids don't ever even bring up their history classes when they're in public school. So they're like, if I even start, my mother's going to go. Okay. We tried this one. I probably shouldn't cover my microphone. I loved the idea of this book. Because some of my kids are have language difficulties like receptive or expressive, it was really hard for us because it's a lot of dictation. They're very long. And so that was one that I took out that I really loved the idea of, but I just had to put it away because it just did not work for my kids. But then, of course, there's a list of other things that they recommend. Okay, so basically at this point, like, what things did you want to get out of this class that I've not really... Oh, and they're big... Okay, I'll tell you. Saxon is one of the masks that they use, and obviously I have a big fat book. Like, I have, like, all of them. I think the reason that I like the Saxon is actually more personal than theirs. Like, I said in the beginning, I was really bad at math, and my mom handed me a math book and said, do this on your own. And the fact that I could take the book and read the lesson on my own and figure it out, I just thought that that was amazing. And I still think that's amazing because when I was in college I was a young adult, and I was like, yeah, well, I never did, you know, much math, whatever. What does my mom do again? She's like, oh, take home my algebra book and borrow it. And I'll tell you, I learned something then that I did not know before that. Hysterical to me. I did not know that you hyphenate number words, right? learned that as a young adult, reading a math book my mother handed me as an adult, right? But we still learn, and I just, so for me, I just like Saxon because it seems like it does a really good job of explaining, and for, I know not everybody loves that it is totally repetitive. I love the repetition because that's what I needed, and I have kids that need repetition, and so for me that works well. I do have friends and neighbors who have used a lot of the other curriculum. I know they talk about Matthew C. My next door neighbor used that several years ago with her kids, and she absolutely loved it. What's the other one? They recommend another one too that one of my other friends used and just was totally in love with. So,
I would mention too that their homeschool, Saxon's homeschool, doesn't follow Common Core.
Yes, that is true.
So if that's something you want to steer clear of.
Uh-huh. Saxon is not. It's.
And I hate Common Core.
Yeah. So they still have some that do Common Core, but not
right.
If you buy the homeschool edition.
Right. So, and I think their newer book, I think this newer book actually addresses which things are Common Core and which are not, or which you can get one way and the other, because some curriculums are now offering Common Core or not Common Core.
Singapore does, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not insufficient. It's a really, like, when I was a school teacher, this was the best math curriculum I came across that I liked.
I do like
so
it. Well, the
really
little kids, and the little kids has manipulatives. It's got a big manipulative box that you can use for the years that need manipulatives. It uses the same box for all the years or additions, whatever. And then the older kids, they have, you know, then there's less manipulatives and more workbooks and DVDs and ideas. Okay, so what are other things that you were hoping to get out that I haven't? Okay, start here.
How do you tackle all of the kind of? It's a lot of literature based for classical.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of reading.
Mm-hmm.
My boys are not so into that. How did you kind of incorporate, I guess?
My boys are not so into that either at all. And, of course, my daughter, who was not a reader, now she reads everything. But I would read to them. Like, I'd read with them. I pulled out A Little Princess, and my boys looked at me like, that's not going to happen. But we read it, and by the second chapter, they were like, why are you stopping? Because I'm falling asleep. But they loved it. Like by the end, it was, they would beg every, like, are we reading now? So I made up a list of books that were important to me that I wanted my kids to read. I mean, it has, you know, classic favorites like The Little House on the Prairie, which my husband had not read, and I suckered him into reading it, and, you know, you just can't put those down, especially Farmer Boy, come on. And I just put on all the books that I just thought would be really good for my kids to read, and most of them were classical just because that's where I just love them. They're classic for a reason. And then I put on a few other newer ones of all levels. I included the Bible and the Book of Mormon. I included whatever. And we told our kids this summer, if you want to earn money, you can read, and I will pay you a penny a page. So for my high school daughter who was reading at breakneck speed, it was okay. She wasn't earning too much. For my littles, you know, like they were reading really easy pages, but it was harder for them to read. So it still worked out pretty even. I still have the list at my house. My kids haven't been taking me up on it as much anymore, but penny a page to read the books I want you to. You can read whatever you want for your own money, but like if you want me to pay you, you read these.
And finding a good history book, especially since, you know, those first 4 years are really that grammar based going through that kind of stuff, having it, finding a good book that it's more of a story that you're going through,
uh-huh.
That's where they just didn't want her to stop, and they really enjoyed
uh-huh.
listening to the story.
We've checked out the audio CD from our library of Story of the World, and
I have that.
When
mm-hmm.
I first did it, my husband was like, really? This is what we're listening to in the car? And now I've had to continually recheck it out, because it's not just the kids,
mm-hmm.
but it's his favorite thing to listen to the point that I'm like, can we give it a rest? Like, how about if we learn about the medieval times? That would be, let's just do something different, please. So that, because it's Jim Weiss, too, that reads it, and he's a wonderful
mm-hmm.
storyteller.
Yeah, so I mean, just, I hate to say sneak it in, but I just, we would just do it. Like, I would count our Book of Mormon, our family reading time, when they would be reading orally, and, like, horrible mean parent, like, my kids are required to follow along. We've done everything from stop people in the middle of verses and expect the next person to pick it up, like, to make sure that they're following along. We've done all of these things. But that can be counted as their reading time, because they are reading. They're reading both orally and just in their head. And so,
when you read to your kids or have them read, do you have them tell things back? My son has a really hard time with this, like to read, you know, like the narration. And
yes, and that, like, I have one kid who, like, it's a really important skill because it helps them summarize, it helps them pick out all the detail. But it's not always easy. Some of my kids, I have one daughter who, oh my goodness, it would take her 20 minutes to get through a 3-paragraph sentence reading it, and by the end I didn't even know what we were reading, but she could totally tell me what it was about. And then I have a son who was really good at phonics, and he just could read anything, but he had absolutely no idea what he had read. As like me reading Spanish, I sound like I know what I'm doing, but I actually have no idea what I just said. And so that, it's difficult, but it's important to do it anyway. So just, I would say try not to make it a fight, but just, it's a skill. The more he does it, the better he's going to get. So just, you know, keep trying.
Sometimes we had to break it down into sentences.
He's my one. You can tell him a sentence, like, the girl ran. What did the girl do?
I don't know. Yeah, that's my kid.
I had a kid who did that forever. He would act like he didn't know what we were talking about. He's 11 now, and for the last couple of years, he will answer every question finally. It's like he was thinking about it, but he didn't want to talk about it. And so then suddenly he started answering the questions that I would ask. And I think he knew all along, he just didn't want to say it out loud.
Part of what helps us with that is finding a topic. If you could find something that he actually
connected with,
wanted to know, then he put more effort into it. Whereas scriptures, that was a nightmare.
He wasn't interested.
Not interested at all.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'll start here and go over.
Sorry. So my son's starting kindergarten this year, and so I'm new to all of this. What subjects do you start a kid on in kindergarten?
Okay. I'll tell you that classical education is not, well, in the Bible of classical education, kindergarten is just kind of a time that's more unstructured, and you just teach your kid through doing things. You count the silverware, you learn the letters, you play games, you whatever, because they're still so young. They're learning all kinds of things, but developmentally sitting there just to do really structured school is not.
So they kind of start at first grade.
They basically start all the structured things at first grade.
Your kids for reading,
just help them get to the point where they love it. Like, I want to sit and read with mom. I want to read this book. If they can read, that's fantastic, because then they're ready for their first grade stuff. So it's just, again, you're at foundation point. So if they are reading, or they're reading ready, and they are learning the basic math things, which I'll be honest, I didn't think counting forks was basic math, because I'm like anti-math in my brain. But it is, you know. There's three of us. We have the neighbors coming over now. How many forks do we need on the table? And so just things like that to get them ready and excited to learn, so that when they are sitting down and writing a sentence, this is very structured. So if it's difficult, they need to be able to say, "Whoa, dang, this is hard. It's going to take me a long time," and do it anyway. And it's really kind of the antidote for immediate gratification, because you're working on things that may take a long time, and you don't, you know, it's not a let's do the easiest, fastest thing. It's we are going to do this correctly. We're going to work on handwriting. We're going to work on sentence structure. We're going to work on what a paragraph is. We're going to develop the story. So if he just likes, thank you. If he likes to learn, and he's excited about reading, and he knows how to hold his pencil, and he's excited to do things, that's probably the best thing you could do for any kid.
And it does talk about it in Well-Trained.
I haven't thoroughly read it. But.
Yeah.
Well, here, I'll make it easier for you. It is a big, fat book. But, like, when you're doing, like, read a little bit at a time. I mean, kind of read through it at some time when you have time, so you have that kind of long-term view of what you're going to do. But it is really nice, because it breaks it down into early years, middle years, whatever, and it even breaks it down by subject, so that you don't get too. I liked it because I looked at the book and I was like, "Mom, there is no way. I'm not making it through that book before I start this. I'm going to die." And she was like, "Just read the first." And there are little sections to help you with things like that. There's even, if you're pulling your kid out mid-year, there's, you know, just if you just want to use it to supplement. I had one kid that we did 1 year. He did two subjects in public school and two subjects at home. He did language arts and science at home, and he did history and math at the school. And so it's pretty applicable for whatever you want to use it for. Okay.
Okay, so I have people who know what they're doing in here. My daughter seems to have ADD issues. My mom is a teacher, also believes. So I'm in the process of having her evaluated for that. I am anti-medication, if at all possible. Does anybody have any helpful hints with trying to get this girl focused?
I had a kid, one of my kids I pulled out. I mean, the end of the year, the teacher was screaming in my face, and the mediator to the meeting had to ask her to sit down.
Are you serious?
Yes, because she wanted me to medicate my kid, and I didn't want to. Because at home, I can do that. At home, I can refocus him 100 times, and the school can't. I mean, in Arizona, there are 27 kids in a first grade class. I'll tell you, it was just difficult because, doing classical education, it was, Joseph, look at me. Joseph, listen to me. Joseph, touch the paper. It was just 100 redirects. But you can do that when you're at home. And I'll tell you, I don't think there's a single person who knows him now. Now he's 15. I don't think there's most people who, he's definitely would never be labeled hyperactive. He still has a hard time focusing on some things. Language would be one of them. But he can control himself.
See, that's what I want to teach my daughter, because she's never been a behavior issue. She's never had problems with hyperactivity. Teachers have thought she's paying attention. She's totally looking, but mm-hmm. she is not there. So, all these years I've been having to reteach everything she learned in the classroom. It's been 4 hours a night, and we're just cutting out that.
Well, I've recently learned things that make me very upset because I don't want to know them. Having a toy in the pocket to play with does actually generally help them to focus better, which seems ridiculous to me, and I don't want to hand my kid one to put in his pocket, but having something else to do does actually, and I actually just read something I haven't tried because it makes me crazy, but they said chewing gum for kids who are having a hard time focusing. Chewing gum is supposed, and I don't know.
I have little chewers for the ends of my kids' pencils because they kept
pencil chewers.
Yeah.
Annihilating them.
Uh-huh.
I hated that they had an eraser.
He likes to have a squeezing. He just has a squeezing. If he has something to squeeze, and I don't know. And I haven't tried it yet, but like I said, I just read one in the New York Times or something that said that if you chew gum, you're supposed to do better on tests if you have a hard time paying attention.
One thing, the lady, there was a class earlier.
Am I done?
Class. It was excellent, and it's talking about this idea because part of the reason that they act the way that they do is because they're not aware of their bodies, and so these things like fidget spinners and stuff to chew on and all this other stuff is them helping them find their body parts and connect with them. And so they're so busy trying to connect and know where their body is that they can't focus. And so she does distance therapy, virtual therapy, if you're interested. Yeah. But, because our son's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
I'd like to hear an example. So, I'm guessing that the son, if you gave him a blank sheet of paper and said, hey, I want you to write a paragraph on such and such, that he was like, no, or just wouldn't do it, or...
Oh, if they're defiant?
No, it's not necessarily.
Or
that's just like they can't think of, what do you want me to write, or... I don't know. It's just
it is really difficult. Like
the writer's block,
yeah,
so to speak. So
yeah.
How did you work that through?
If you're wanting him to write a story or to start being more creative, Well, it's sometimes it's hard. I was gonna say, I have some kids who are lazy and don't want to do it, and I have some kids who have difficulty doing it. So I think it's a little bit different. I bought this book. Called Story Starters. I actually think it's better for older kids, but it has a story. It starts with a story, and it's a good story. It's an involved story. It's a fun story. And then it ends. It doesn't end. It cliffhangers. And so it gives your kids somewhere to start. I bought a book downstairs last year that I think is good for littles. It's not quite as detailed as I would like. This is almost too detailed, and that one was almost not detailed enough, but it was called Littles, Middles, and Biggles, Stacy Lytle. I bought that last year, and I did use it. Basically, they're just ideas for a kid to start, because sometimes that starting the idea is really difficult. It also gives, the one reason I like this one is because as it develops a story, it kind of gives the child an idea of how a story is developing. So the more they do it, they have, it's kind of like handwriting. If you're not looking at somebody's good handwriting, it's hard to, I don't know. It's that building the foundation in the first through fourth grade where you actually know how. I'm sorry, I'll tell you this fast story. One of my kids was in first grade, came home every day with pen and permanent marker on his shirt, and I was angry. Like, what are you doing? Well, we're writing on each other. I'm like, clearly you're writing on each other. Why do you have pens? You're in first grade. Like, so I went into the, he's like, we're not allowed to write with anything else. And I'm like, that cannot be possible. You're in first grade. So I went into first grade, and his teacher, they were really focused on creativity and developing ideas in first grade. So they were not allowed to erase anything because she didn't want them hampered by mistakes. So he did not know how to spell. He'd had horrific handwriting. He could not form a sentence, but she wouldn't allow them to erase and fix anything. So by second grade, anybody, like mom says, that handwriting's not flying, redo this. And he is, what does it matter? Like, and that was, he's in high school and he's finally starting to work on his handwriting because he finally cares. But it was, if you do not have that foundation of how to do it, then creativity almost doesn't matter. And it,
I was just gonna say with the creative writing, my oldest son, he's totally like, things that aren't real don't matter to him. He's one that wants to read like science encyclopedias and stuff. And so sometimes,
how old is he?
8.
Okay.
So sometimes that creative writing can kind of go against what they, I don't know how they're,
well, and but when you're looking at the development of the brain, a young kid does not have an abstract brain. So as much as we want them to envision things, they can at some level, but they do not even have the mental capability to be thinking in total abstract. And so to require that creativity when they're younger, they're not really necessarily, and again, every kid is different, but the majority of them, like, that's not something they can even developmentally do at that point. Because they're very factual. Write a story about this picture.
Yeah, I didn't draw it, so I don't know what they were thinking.
That's another thing that works for getting kids to start. Have them draw a picture, and then have them write about the picture. Like, what were you thinking when you wrote the, when you drew the picture? What were you envisioning?
We've been reading about this in the science. Why don't you write your own little book about it?
Okay.
Yes.
We can keep talking if we want, but just so you know, officially we're over.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.